Sometimes life's troubles mount up to the point where we don't know whether to cry or laugh. When you're sick, health experts suggest you allow yourself to go through the emotional rough spots, but also to keep your sense of humor.
Well, my doctor told me that it's not a punishment. When I got diagnosed, he said, "Robert, this is not a punishment." He said it's like the lottery. He said, "That's just the way it is." And I said, "You know, I have a hard time comparing winning like $147 million with, you know, getting non-Hodgkin's lymphoma."
Bald-headed comedian Robert Schimmel in Los Angeles weaves his bout with testicular cancer into his stand-up routines. He's one of a wacky assortment of comics, we'll hear, who have personally faced the gloom of cancer and who have also found ways to laugh at it. Brightening your outlook can profoundly affect your battle with serious illness. Physician Patrick Borgen treats cancer patients.
If a patient gets bad news, and if their doctor says, "You don't have any hope at all," more likely than not, that patient is going to die of their disease. This has been shown over and over again. So if we destroy hope, if we destroy optimism, we will almost always have a bad outcome. This implies that the immune system plays some role in our homeostasis, in our health. And all of us in this field believe that to be true. The more optimistic, the more upbeat a patient is, the better I've seen them do.
Dr. Borgen, a surgeon, is chief of the breast service at Memorial Sloan Kettering in New York, one of the world's leading cancer hospitals. He's also an advisor to Comedy Fights Cancer, an organization that sends comedians to cheer up patients. It's not that just joking around could somehow substitute for serious treatment, but the role of mental attitude and physical health, says Dr. Borgen, should not be underestimated.
I've been here at Memorial for 15 years and have treated between 4,000 and 5,000 women with breast cancer personally, myself. And I've gotten a chance to observe the disease from beginning to end in thousands of patients. And certain commonalities emerge from that are undeniable. If a patient believes they're going to do poorly, they're going to do poorly. If a patient is upbeat and a fighter, in my opinion, they do better, partially because of that attitude.
This is the chemotherapy infusion unit of the Johnson Cancer Center at the University of California, Los Angeles. Patients often come here with a range of emotions, from fear to faith, from acceptance to courage. According to Dr. Borgen, positive cancer patients tend to tolerate treatment more easily, tend to heal faster, have fewer infections, and experience less post-operative pain. And if there's a setback, if the cancer recurs or spreads, they are less paralyzed, he says, and they more readily take action.
I have had the privilege of taking care of a comedian, and she wound up going through surgery and chemo and radiation, and a spouse leaving her during the process. And her reaction to this was to incorporate it into her act.
So I'm pretty much at a point in my life where whatever I'm doing, I'm always thinking, when is this crap over so I can lie back down? I have a question for you. How long do you have to be up once you've awoken for your day before lying back down?
Marion Grodin is a comedy writer and producer for film and television who began performing stand-up in the 1990s. We met in a New York City rehearsal space where her father, actor and writer Charles Grodin, was trying out a new play. In 2003, Marion was diagnosed with cancer.
It was like 2:30 in the morning. I'd been doing stand-up all weekend. My hand grazed my breast as I was reaching for a towel, getting out of the shower, and I felt a lump. And my heart stopped because I knew it. I knew right away.
So did you get checked up right away?
Got checked out right away, and it was just a really surreal, horrifying, moving down a dark tunnel, surreal experience where you keep waiting for somebody to say, it's not cancer. That's basically finding out you have cancer. For me, the experience was you keep waiting for somebody to say the words, it's something, but it's not cancer.
So at what point did you have to confront the reality?
Quickly. It's funny because I'm a real, like, Jewish hypochondriacal, total neurotic, you know, but I didn't have the cancer thing. You know, like people would say to me, well, God, you know, given your personality type, you're high strung, you're, you know, a banana cake, didn't you always obsess? I said, no, I didn't have that one. I had, is the oven off? I had, is the door locked? I had, is the house burning down? Is anything potentially flammable? I have all that, but I didn't have the cancer thing. I wasn't somebody who walked around thinking, oh no, is this cancer? Ever. And my mother had died of cancer, and yet I still didn't have that. I remember my husband took me out for dinner, and I was just, you know, I just felt like I was on another planet. I remember I said I wanted to get chocolate cake, and he said, don't get chocolate cake, because if the way that you try to get through this is with chocolate cake, you know, it's going to mean a lot of chocolate cake. So
did you choose a different dessert?
No, I think I had chocolate cake. I think I probably went with the cake.
Now, here you are, a comedy writer.
Right.
A comedy performer.
Yes.
Coming from a comedy family.
Yes.
Were you able to find anything light in this extremely dire moment?
I always do my entire life. I mean, pretty quickly I would joke with my husband's Aunt Pat, who'd always complimented my bathing suit, and I would joke, you know, about dying, which was, you know, such a release and relief for me. And I would say, like, tell Aunt Pat she's getting the suit, you know, or I joke about I always wanted a breast reduction, just not this way, or, you know, all of that stuff and the genetic testing and because I'm Jewish, they said you have to find out if you're an Ashkenazi Jew. And it sounded to me like they were saying ask a Nazi. And I was like, oi, I don't have enough source. Now I have to find a Nazi. And I have to, like, oi, Vez Mir, I got enough problems. I have to hunt down a Nazi and ask him about my breast. And, you know, ask a Nazi. So I'm calling everyone. Are we Ashkenazi Jew? No one knows what the hell I'm told. What? You know, call Aunt Sheila. Call nobody. Where are we from? You know, we're from Brooklyn. No, originally, you know, we're from the garment district. I don't know. Is anyone from Poland originally? So, yeah, I mean, there was always laughter, you know. I mean, beside devastation are the biggest laughs. I mean, it's proportionate. The worse the trauma, the bigger the laughs.
Marion Grodin is not afraid to wear her heart on her sleeve. She talks openly about her encounter with cancer, her miscarriages and marital breakup, and her long-term success at staying clean and sober. And she keeps coming back to humor as a powerful antidote to the stress and the mess that life sometimes serves up.
Well, I think it's a tool, you know, like swimming or meditating, that helps you live, that keeps you buoyant, that keeps you afloat, that gives you mirth, that's like a life preserver in a sea of difficulty, you know, but it can't be instead of. I mean, I've cried so much in the last couple years, and that's been so necessary. So I'm really a believer in grieving and having your feelings, because I think that that is as necessary and natural, you know, an outflow of energy as laughter or, like, you know, peeing. I mean, I think it's just as, really, it's just as natural. You need to laugh, you need to eat, you need to breathe, you need to sleep. It's, to me, laughter is just as fundamentally essential as any of those other things.
One setting where Marion finds laughter is support groups, where fellow cancer survivors connect with each other. It helps them replace an attitude of grim and bear it with grin and share it.
I was in a group where a lot of people were having very extreme operations. Like, I had a lumpectomy. I ended up having two, but a lot of people were having mastectomies and you know, double bilateral mastectomies, and then having like their ovaries removed, which is called like an oophorectomy, and all of this. And I got to a point where I was like, all right, you know what? You can have everything removed. What you're just going to be like a head on like a stump. Like, what's even left, you know? Remove it all. Cut my ass off my head. I'll just be like an arm on a foot. I mean, because you can get so scared that there's, if you have a body, there could be cancer. This is life.